This is Tony Topping. You're listening to Off Planet Radio.
It is said that Joseph Stalin, or not Joseph Stalin, actually it was Mussolini, took over Italy and made the trains run on time. I can guarantee you there's no fascist dictatorship here. We are totally inefficient. We are totally unauthoritarian. And things routinely screw up. And so we're fashionably late as usual, 6 minutes after the hour on a Friday night. I'm Randy Moggins. This is Off Planet Radio. And what can I say? I've stopped apologizing for the inefficiencies of this thing. We're underground radio. If you want a smooth-running machine, there's lots of networks out there that are well-funded by the cabal and perfectly capable of making you happy with yourself in thinking that you live in a perfect world. We live in an imperfect world. We live in a world that has been shaped by lunatics, fashioned by insane people, and the car is being driven by blind idiots, and that is the samba that we dance to on this planet right now, and it doesn't get any better by bitching about it, so get over yourselves. Anyway, that's on the dark side of things. I gotta say a couple of things first, prefatory remarks. I'm always amazed, and I guess the word would be gratified by those who do support what we do. And for those of you out there who continue to support in whatever way, I appreciate it. Your donations have been extremely noticed and extremely welcome this time of year. It's cold. It's winter. I know you've got light bills to pay and heat bills to pay. You people in Boston are probably bought out of snow shovels at this point. And most of the country is in the deep freeze. And so I always, always say thank you for your support. By the way, if you hit our YouTube channel, which is youtube.com/offplanetradio, don't forget to join up there. Don't forget to do whatever it is that you do. That we've got 2,000 right now regular listeners on the YouTube channel, and the hits are going up. And as always, that's an amazing experience. For however long it lasts, however long we have the internet, all we can do is just throw it out the window and hope that you get it. We're going to talk about law tonight, and we're going to talk seriously about law. All manner of lunacy is all over the internet about what you're going to do to have standing, to get your rights back. There are a lot of people out there who seem to think that the golden key is the so-called all caps name. There are people who are fighting battles in courts, routinely being hauled off to jail. There are movements that have been fashioned by insurgents on the internet to distract you, to take you off point, to get you to think that there's some silver bullet, that there's some easy way to do this. There is no easy way to freedom. I'll say that again. There is no easy way to freedom. It has taken us, I guess, almost 150 years to get into the mess we're in, and we're not going to extricate ourselves by sitting on our butts watching YouTubes and thinking that if you just could change your name on all those documents and get back your legal standing in the courts, everything would be okay. That's delusion, and my guest tonight is going to speak to it. He is a veteran of the movement, 20 years of work in researching law. He is a jurist. He is an author of the book called The Red Amendment. And The Red Amendment speaks to the issues of freedom in the United States. What happened to it? What happened to the Constitution? What happened as a result of the Civil War, the Reconstruction, and the amendments that followed the Reconstruction that led up to the mess that we began to enter into after the turn of the 20th century, 1911, 1913, then, of course, 1933, and thereafter as we entered into the caravan of communism. My guest tonight is known as Leonard B. Bork. We know him as LB, and he is the author of The Red Amendment. LB, welcome to Off Planet Radio.
Oh, thank you for having me, Randy. First time,
but I got a sense we're going to be talking a lot. It's good to get you on, finally. I've spent a few months, and I would like to say that I've thoroughly read and digested this, but I have not. This is a big book, it's a big subject, and as I said, in my intro tonight, LB, this isn't an easy road to travel. This is something that we have to work our way through, and this is not for the faint of heart, and it's not for the lazy. Tell us a little bit about how you got to the place where you authored this book called The Red Amendment.
Okay, I guess it started a long time ago. When I was four, I knew there was something wrong. By looking at the back of the $1 bill, I thought that pyramid was kind of creepy.
Yeah.
I was sitting there. My grandmother had a bunch of silver coins and different currencies in a place in the closet in the bedroom, and I, you know, got in there and started looking around. And, you know, being a four-year-old, you don't have much money running through your hands because you're not a consumer yet.
Right.
But, you know, I found, you know, some dollar bills. I don't know the relevance of why she had them saved. They must have been special. I don't know if they're silver dollar bills or what, but anyway, I think that's when my journey really started. I think I've been being talked to by our Creator even at a young age, and you know, you put that stuff away basically, and just be of the world, like the parents make you be, and probably most people's parents do. And I think my next message was, I started a business when I was 19, so I never was in the corporate world and never truly worked for anyone. I probably work for people. I'm in my 50s now. I probably work for people, and you know, about a total of 3 years of my life, I've always been working for myself. I've been doing this 20 years, like you said. But anyway, I was in my ex-wife's place of business. She worked for one of the major bank corporations, and I was she worked for a processing center. And I saw a thing called human resources on the door back in the 80s. And from what I remember of my dad's work when he took me there occasionally, you know, I remember walking past the personnel department door.
Wait a minute, you said personnel department. That's what dates you, because they're human resources now. Didn't you know that?
Yeah, well, that's what I'm talking about here. So the point is, there's a transition going on. And, you know, I put it away for a few more years, and I had a business, like I said. And I got a letter from one of the representatives. I was in the state of Arizona at the time, or Arizona. I was within the state, I guess, because I didn't know any better at the time. But it said basically that your business is under threat from things that are going on in Congress. And me being a bad little citizen, I never voted, could care less. You know, between the Kennedy assassination and, you know, the Nixon and all this junk that had happened over the years of my youth. Vietnam War was a big one, watching that mess. Even though I was young, you know, I was only in my 10 years old or whatever, but it was still kind of threatening. And I guess I didn't pay well attention in school. I got C's and D's, just enough to get by because I was bored with it. But anyway, I got that letter from the congressman, and it said my business would be threatened. And this was the late 80s, I believe, or 90 maybe. Anyway, 4 years later, you know, we have Clinton coming on board and stuff, and he passed NAFTA and GATT, and that was the threat,
right,
that was in that letter. And I decided at that time I got to start doing something. So, anyway, I had a group of people I worked with in Arizona at the time. It was a citizens research group, and of course we studied law. We helped a lot of people with the problems they had with taxes mostly. There was a lot of groups that were out then. I can't even, Phil Marsh, was that one of them? Do you remember?
I don't remember, no.
Yeah, but anyway, a lot of people are getting in trouble for these tax testing positions they have. So we were seeing people go to prison, get, you know, property taken. And the constitutional positions weren't working. So I started doing my own research, and I knew there was something to the 14th Amendment, but no one could really answer my questions, you know. The movement was really messed up in that respect, and there was a plethora of different ideas about the Reconstruction Acts of the Civil War, and or the Reconstruction Acts and the amendments. A lot of people center on the acts, but that was just kind of the precursor to the Reconstruction Amendments, which are the 13th, 14th, and 15th. And I found out that they're basically the government was usurped, and that's what Reconstruction means. It means it was reconstructed into being something that it wasn't. And that's where my research brought me to write the book. And you know, all the information's out there, the material that you need to figure it out, but no one has. And the most telling thing I found, which was in the United States Code, is you mentioned dictatorship and oppressive government. It's defined right in the code about the communist takeover and the threat it was to the world. That's one of the things I found. I showed it to a friend of one of the other groups I was in Arizona at the time, and I showed it to him. He goes, "What's that doing in there?" And I go, "Good question." This was early on in 95 or something like that. So, you know, then that's the start of my research. And, you know, they basically know what's going on or tell you what's happening, but no one pays attention to it. I guess my claim to fame is the breakdown of Section 2 of the 14th Amendment, which basically says it's a crime to vote.
Oh, yeah, this is huge.
Yeah. So what they did is they had to, you know, they put puppet governments in the southern states, the United States did, changed their governments. They yanked the governments out, put their own in with the Reconstruction Acts, and they had to get the rest of the states to go along with it, so they had to create a rebellion against the original system to put this new one in. And it's political. It's all tied to political means to get it done. And voting, of course, is the ultimate consent. So they tell you right there, the right to vote is denied except for participation in rebellion. It was plain as day, I saw it. A lot of people have trouble swallowing that because they can't believe that they've been had.
Yeah, well, we've been had. I mean, we've been completely snookered. But then again, the education system has played into that as well, because nobody's been properly educated in any of the fundamental issues, including what were called civics courses when I was in school. And I guess I don't know what they call it now. I don't even know if they teach this anymore.
I don't know what they teach. I just know these kids are pathetic these days. I can't even deal with them.
Well,
I mean, they can't even make change at the cash register.
Oh, no. Everybody now needs a computer to breathe. I mean, it really is pathetic. I stand there and do mental math when people are making change. I've watched people with an LCD screen in front of them at McDonald's, and they still get the change wrong, and you got to count it back to them. They can't count change. They can't figure in their head. They don't know numbers. They don't know how to speak anymore.
No, I had a friend actually say that his girlfriend, she has a 14-year-old daughter. She actually was telling her mom one day that, "Mom, you got to stop talking on the phone. It's not cool. You got to be texting."
Yeah, yeah. OMG, yeah, right. What's the BFD?
Yeah,
where we're at. We're having some streaming problems right now, and I know you have some people that want to hear this show. I'm looking at the chat box right now, and I just checked the stream, and it looks like right now something's gone wrong with the stream feed. So what I want to do here is I'm going to reboot the streaming computer for the people who are on the chat right now. This is going to be about 2 minutes to get it back up and running. So just bear with us. We're going to drop the stream. LB and I are going to stay here, and then we'll come back in as soon as this computer reboots, and hopefully it will correct the problem. So, okay, so we should be back on the stream right now, and if it's still garbled, I know some people wanted to call in as well, and maybe what we can do is we'll just pull a few people in later on. Anyway, we were kind of on the path where, and it's interesting that you mentioned your grandmother having those coins. I have a gold coin that I came into possession a few years ago that was, it was in my mother's safe when she passed away. And it's a gold coin that my grandmother had passed down to each of her eight children. Got one of these. They were part of the gold coins that my grandparents hoarded when FDR confiscated the gold. And this coin has an incredible amount of meaning to me because I remember my mom telling me the story behind it. I think that people in older generations, specifically maybe our parents, but certainly our grandparents, understood what was happening on some level, even if it wasn't conscious. They saw the evil that was occurring when, for instance, the Federal Reserve forced the recall of gold back into their own vaults and basically stripped the currency of any value backed by precious metals. And so, you know, we have this entire system that's now been hijacked with fiat currency and diminished to the point where it is nothing more than being run like a gigantic casino, which goes back into the whole conversation of what happened with the 14th Amendment, but more specifically, what happened with the Reconstruction after the so-called Civil War. So maybe we back the conversation up a little bit, LB, to what exactly happened in what was called the Civil War and what that means. Because I think, as you point out in your book, the term Civil War is incorrect. It was not really a Civil War.
Right, and that comes from the Supreme Court. That's basically political newspeak. The Supreme Court calls it the war between the states. It's more their, you know, they don't tell the whole truth. You know, they tell you half-truths and hint at things a lot. And you have to be aware of what's going on to understand what they're saying. And when I got back into this back in the 1990s, you know, everyone was looking to case law. They still do today. And, you know, the reason there's case law is because someone made a mistake. If you understand that, things don't go to the Supreme Court, for instance, unless there's a question that of law. If you're doing things correctly, you stay out of the courts. So, basically, I came up with a rule. The number one rule of how to study law is don't read case law, because you don't know what they're saying. And a lot of people have made that mistake. And I forget what you were trying to get at as far as wanted me to go.
Well, I think the first point is, what exactly was this? What was the so-called Civil War? Because
okay, that's right.
The technical term itself is meaningless in the context of what it really was, and especially in light of what you bring out in your writing.
Right. Well, to put it simply, which I've never heard anyone talk about really ever, that they don't talk about the Constitution being an international agreement. It's like a treaty. So everything that's incorporated in that document is private international law. So each of the states being a state nation and a country, it's supposedly the United States is their entity doing some work for them, you know, our jobs, certain delegated things pursuant to international law. The states themselves are the ones that adopted the common law systems. And you have to get into the history of the Federalist. They wanted a one nation state type situation, which is pursuant to Marxism, because Marxism basically says that they want to do away with countries and nationalities. So basically what the United States was, even under the Constitution, was a boilerplate or a model for the New World Order to start getting rid of this, the countries and nationalities, the different jurisdictions. And you can't convince me otherwise that it's mercantilism. And it's, you know, put on by a certain faction. We won't get into that tonight. But it goes back 2,000 or more years. The people that control mercantilism throughout the world. And a lot of people have probably studied this and probably have heard some of this. But the fine points of each state being a nation means that it was an international war between the states. It was like let's say Canada and the United States fighting each other. And there's people think Canada is a country and the United States a country, which it isn't. So the North and the South were similar entities fighting against each other. But it wasn't really the North. It was the United States using the Northern states as, tools to fight against the South. So it was truly an international war. A civil war would have to take place within a country. So, again, the Civil War terminology is political newspeak. Mm-hmm. It's a lie in law. That's the long and the short of it, I guess.
It goes into one of the key aspects in the Red Amendment, which is the idea that as originally organically constituted, the United States was not technically a nation. Am I saying that correctly? A nation?
It's not. Vattel defined it as a federal republic. A federation republic, and what Vattel said, it the state nations that join into this federal republic contract or agreement retain all sovereignty. They just ally for certain purposes, but of course the Constitution has delegated some sovereignty issues away, so the United States does claim sovereignty. So when you look at it, the United States in the international arena, from the outside of the United States, it looks like a country. The main reason being, I believe, and it's been said by the courts, that their right to treaty has been taken away from them. And the right to contract for men is the ultimate natural right. So it's also been said that natural rights of a nation are the same as the natural rights for men. So they actually gave up their ultimate right by delegating their treaty power to the United States. And the other main problem with the Constitution is they also gave up their rule of naturalization. So they don't have any control of who comes into each country of the Union and becomes a part of the body politic of that state or country.
Boy, there's an issue that's extremely timely right now, given what's going on with the present occupant of the White House attempting to bring in millions of across the border, I guess, new welfare recipients.
Yeah, well, they're just moving people around. You know, I've said this for a while. People have no idea they're moved around like cattle. You know, it's this just this, dare I use the term Illuminati? Well, we kind of mentioned it already with the dollar bill, but it's the Illuminati that's moving people around at will. They're trying to displace, like I talked about in the book, this is all planned, it's right in the code, the mass immigration that they've planned for the last 30, 40 years. What they're doing is, they're, in my opinion, they're just a belief, it's an opinion and a belief, that they're displacing the original population with new debtors. So, because the if you have a people that's bound together for any period of time, they start to wake up or they're close, so they have to break up the people of the territories of the states and destroy their unity and bring in more debtors to take our place. And that's what they're doing. And if you look in the Communist Manifesto, or the writings of Marx too, they say working men have no country. So basically it's built into that. They bring their debt slaves or move them around, their human resources around at will. So it's all part of the Communist Manifesto. As long as we're on that point, you know, people say that the Communist Manifesto or the communists are opposed to capitalism and vice versa. Well, that's BS. The Communist Manifesto is nothing but a blueprint for fascism, and it you know, aids capitalism, which people confuse that also. Capitalism is not free enterprise. Free enterprise is done by local or poor people. It can be done by poor people. Like my friend William states, capitalism is basically defined as the one with the most money wins. There's no restriction to it. And they're going to swallow up everything that's path. And, of course, fascism uses the government or the power system of the government to assert that power of the corporation to have laws made to allow it to function and overpower the people of the territory. One thing I noticed, you know, for a long time is you see governments, or not governments, but the corporations, they pawn off their operating expenses on the population they do business with. And that's unquestionably true because they don't pay taxes. You know, that's part of that income tax scheme of the Communist Manifesto. They've got all the idiots called human resources or citizens paying the taxes.
Let's do something here. I cannot get this stream issue corrected, and we've got some people out there on the chat line, and I'm going to try and bring them in on the Skype. I'm going to ask them to come in muted, and I'm putting a message out now so that, you know, some of these folks can hear it. I cannot correct what's going on with I've been sitting here trying to re-engineer this on the fly, and it's not working. So right now what I'm going to do is I'm going to put a message out for as many people as I can hold on Skype right now to come in, and they'll be muted, and we'll ask them to stay muted while we continue the interview. So just hang in here with me a minute, LB, and this will be an interesting experience. I have no way right now to fix this. It's an encoder problem, and I suspect it's server level.
Yeah, like I said, I've been having problems with the streams on the internet lately. But I figure it's the college students in this town watching porn.
Well, I'd like to think that there's nobody in this house right now that's given that, but this is
This is just a problem that I had. My computer got completely trashed. It was, and I'll just ask as you callers come in on Skype, please stay muted. And we're gonna try and fit as many people in here as possible.
So you're gonna be able to record this for
I am
other
recording
people
this.
Later.
Yeah, no, this is no problem. We're recording even as we go. We'll just cut out the segments that are gaps between us. It's a horrible distraction. Like I said, we streamed Wednesday night, had no problems at all with this. And I rebooted the system today, and lo and behold, it's
voila.
Yeah, it's completely messed up again. Because we do a live stream on Wednesday nights where I produce a couple of hosts. So, let's see if a few more people want to come in on this. Right now, I could probably, you know, if I had the time, I'd patch back out the free conference call or something. But honestly, you know, we set up a stream page, and to do it any other way right now is just logistically impossible. So, I'm putting that out with a number. And I took the stream down, so I can't even talk to people right now. This kind of sucks, but it's...
You're taking it lightly. You said kind of sucks.
Well, I'm a tattered war veteran. I've had horrible things happen on the air. I've been jammed. I watched a computer melt down one night. The computer got so hot, I couldn't touch it, literally, on a live show. The entire computer just burned up live on the air. It doesn't get any better than that when your computer melts down right on the air. And a lot of this is bots and worms and things that are being injected into the systems. I mean, I can prove that because I've done the forensics on hard drives and on computers. This computer is a workstation. This is actually a workstation level technical computer that's used for production. So, you know, it's as good a computer as I can possibly afford to throw at this endeavor. And when we did the show last week, we got completely botted on the network, and that computer was the firewall, because the computer we're talking on right now is a different computer. So I'm assuming that at this point, I'm sure we discouraged a lot of people. I really apologize for this, and those who hear the recording later, we'll make this up to you. There was just no way I could anticipate a system that worked fine on Wednesday not performing snuff tonight, but I'll get it fixed.
You can blame me.
So, welcome to those of you who have joined us, and we apologize for the technical glitches tonight. We're running kind of a loose show here, and it is kind of a major distraction when technology fails. But at least we get a few people in so that you're not disappointed. Are you there, LB?
I get annoyed with this chat mentality. I know Mylene's on. I know.
I mean, the whole Facebook thing is... I'm having trouble adding, but it's good because it gets us off of the... You know, producing a radio show means you're producing a radio show, and sometimes that gets in the way of authenticity too, and I forget that. There's times when I just drop the whole disguise and go, okay, can we just talk now? Where we left off in the discussion, I think, was taking us into the space of understanding you had gone into the construction of what we'll call the union. Is that a safe term? Is there any safe term to define things at this point, LB?
I like the word union.
I do
always
too.
Correct people. It's like if you're going to be strict about the law of nations, each state is a nation and a country, and it's a union of countries. I use union-wide instead of national, which is, you know, the newspeak political term. Mm-hmm. And during the Constitutional Convention, they actually changed. They wanted to call everywhere that United States is used in the Constitution. It was originally national, and they switched the terminology. And basically, it's very confusing. If you look at the construct of, or the context of United States, where it's used in the Constitution, it can mean three different things. It can mean the small United States, or the sum of them, I believe, and or the corporation called the United States, or the, you know, the Union State. And there's the case that went over that, but you don't even need that case to do it, because, like I said, you look at the sentence structure, the context it's used, as it's used, the term United States in the Constitution. If you are good at figuring things out, you should be able to figure that out.
But, you know, one of the things that you and I talked about was diagramming sentences, and you've got to be the only person in a decade that's ever brought up diagramming sentences. I remember excruciating sessions in English classes spent diagramming sentences. But it was really the key to understanding construction of language, and that's like completely gone now.
Yes.
And unfortunately, it's gone even in law, because I do read decisions. I do read, and because I'm sometimes thrown into legal situations, and I read decisions, and I read what the attorneys are putting out, and I look at their construction, and it is convoluted. It's doublespeak. Some of it's constructed in ways that are designed to deliberately obfuscate rather than clarify points.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've got a diagram of the 14th Amendment, Section 2, that someone else did. I think, an electrical engineer had some people do it, or professionals do it, just to prove that I was right. Section 2 of the 14th Amendment is actually a formula to reduce the people that are represented, and that's where the confusion comes in for a lot of people. And you know, like I said, the second sentence says the right to vote is denied except for participation in rebellion, and the first sentence basically states that there's only two sentences, but it's the second sentence is a long run-on sentence, but the first sentence says everyone's represented, and then it's reduced. For what reason? You know, why did they reduce it? And the concept is, you can't be represented if you don't consent. So, like I said during the first half hour, the ultimate consent is voting. So you can't vote unless you participate in this rebellion. And we're talking about specific words. The people that think that the Reconstruction Acts are the same as the 14th Amendment are crazy, because it was a trick. They talk about rebellion in the Reconstruction Acts, or Act, this one specific one, but it says the rebellion. You can't participate in the government of the southern states if you participate in the rebellion. And even that was wrong terminology, because they weren't rebelling against the United States. That was political newspeak. But you get into the 14th Amendment, it says participation in rebellion. So it's no longer a titled rebellion or a single reference. It's many, whatever rebellion.
What are they really saying there, though? Are they now clarifying or not?
It's a different rebellion.
Okay.
See, it's a different one, totally. That's what my point is. It's not the same rebellion. It's the future one.
But it's never defined specifically. It's euphemistic.
Yes, they don't define this anywhere. It's like a secret, just like a lot of the things they do.
So, who were the people? And I know that you're not an historical expert, but who were the monsters that wrote this language?
I don't know if we know who exactly wrote it.
By God, I'm going to find out. Now I'm going to
mission. That's a good research.
Because I sat here after I talked to you last night, and I've literally, some nights I go to bed and I take this with me because, oddly enough, I find it soothing to know that that there's somebody trying to understand this. And I'm reading this again and I'm going, who in the hell? This actually is satanic. I'm just going to flat out say it, because as nearly as I can tell, to understand Creator's laws are rather simple. It looks to me like, and the old saying, the devil is in the details. Well, it looks to me like there's a hell of a lot of details, and there's a lot of devil in this thing.
Yes, exactly. And it's all on purpose to confuse people. You know, I was arguing with someone on Facebook a couple weeks ago, and he says, you're lying to people. And I go, really? I go, prove it. And, you know, prove I'm lying, because I believe it wholeheartedly. And, you know, just like fraud's hard to prove, it's almost impossible to prove fraud. You know, he can't prove that I'm not being honest about what I'm saying. And, you know, it's there. I have had umpteen people, you know, believe that it does say that after they look at it, if they're intelligent enough, and if they want to see it. Most people don't want to see it because they can't believe they've been deceived that bad. So, you know, it does say it. It's unbelievable. And I saw it right away when I started reading the Constitution. It stuck out like a sore thumb to me. I go, wait, what did that say? You know? And like I said, it's easy to understand that you can't be represented by someone unless you consent to it.
So how does this hook in to the whole voting thing? I mean, okay, let's reframe for a minute here, because what happens is that we had what you call in your book a rump Congress. Explain what happened to the Congress as a result of the South basically vacating Congress and the actions that occurred there. Is that the point at which we got the rump Congress?
Yes, they left and really didn't come back in a lawful manner. And I haven't studied that really deep. My friend Joseph Rory is more proficient about explaining that. But maybe he can be on your show sometime.
That would be an interesting conversation.
He's a historian. He's studied a lot of the historical background surrounding Reconstruction. He's also he's pretty good at the Constitution Convention itself. I stick to the law and the international aspects of what happened. And
so at this point, LB, the South walks out, they vacate Congress. What should have happened and what really did happen? Lincoln clearly at this point is presented with a situation that was unprecedented. I don't think it was even anticipated in the original Constitution. So what did happen and what, in your view, should have happened at this point?
They should have stayed away, I guess. That would be my guess.
Would they have just dissolved?
They should have dissolved the whole thing.
And then
I believe.
And then, to me, looking back at it historically with, you know, my own limited understanding right now, it seems to me like it would have been intelligent to dissolve it and then attempt to work out grievances through international tribunals.
Yes, if there was such a thing back then. But I don't even know.
It looks like, and you know, this does go into history, and the little bit I know about it, I know, for instance, that there were Jesuit insurgents that were in the country at that point who had basically come down through Canada, and they were actually the original
genesis for what eventually became the KKK in the South. But it looks like there was a lot of interference from outside, which, again, we go back into the C word, the conspiracy theory. But I can't help but think that all of this was engineered in some way, including even some of the loopholes that appear in the Constitution itself.
Mm-hmm. Which there's a lot. Like I said, the naturalization clause is a big problem. Because if a people doesn't have control of its people, and who enters the country and who becomes part of the political body, and if they don't have control of their land, they don't have anything. Their sovereignty's gone.
So those were rights that were enumerated in the original Constitution, and I can't help but think, again, that nobody anticipated such a situation. It seems like from the very beginning, even just from the name of the Continental Congress, that somehow they had the idea that this was an aggregate nation that would deal with issues of land and peoples on the level of a, quote, national government.
Right. And that was the plan. So, you know, there, even Justice Marshall said that the United States are a corporation. Some people say that's, bad grammar, but that's the way he said it. The United States are a corporation, and they're basically formed to handle land. I'm not quoting it perfectly. I'm paraphrasing what he said. Transactions. They handle land transactions. So it negotiated to get the extra land aside the 13 colonies.
It was
the negotiator.
In your mind, the original 13 colonies to me have always kind of looked like the key. Did we have a formula for extending the original organic constitution to states as they were added? In other words, as we added states...
Is there a provision?
Yeah, did they become party to that constitution by...
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, there's a clause that admits new states to the union. And most of the enabling acts for the states are on equal footing with the original 13 states. To dig deep into that, what that really means, I don't know. As most people know, there's also a clause that the Constitution specifies that the debts of the Confederation are carried forward. So there's a lot of things that are in the background that I have not researched that probably happened or transpired at the time that maybe that debt is still going on today. As we see, I believe it's probably goes, I was talking to another friend this last week, and we believe it goes back to maybe thousands of years.
The debt.
It's the same debt, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And that's what I've suspected is, I think this actually goes back to the law of Hammurabi.
Yes. It could, but like I said, I don't know what it is.
Right, it kind of goes into some of the spiritual situations that, would be a whole other radio show itself, except that I will say that in the King James Bible, they use the term debts, and I always puzzled over that because there's two renderings, for instance, of the Lord's Prayer. One is trespass and one is debts, and I've gone back and forth, even as a kid, I looked at that and I went, well, debts, what? And it wasn't until I read the tax code and saw that no citizen may protest the debt. And I'm going, wait a minute. This is like a consistent meme of this debt thing. What is the debt, and why in the hell do I owe anybody a debt? And I've asked this question over and over again. If we have a national debt, who do we owe it to? And what do we have to do to either pay it off or go through some kind of jubilee situation to get rid of it? Because you can't hold perpetual debt.
No, and it's like I was trying to get at or trying to articulate that we don't know how old it is. We have not seen, had disclosure on it. And it's hard to speculate without the evidence, you know. So, like I stated before, the ultimate natural right is not to be in servitude. Or the right to contract is also a great natural right. It's one of the fundamental rights we have. So servitude, it goes all the way back, of course, thousands of years, but the common law also recognizes servitude. So the 13th Amendment was put in place, which is interesting, and it prohibits involuntary servitude. Servitude is just plain, bondage or being indebted to someone. So it has to be voluntary. So again, this is another trick of the 14th Amendment system. They've tricked all these citizens under, Section 1 of the 14th Amendment to be in bondage or servitude, and they can't question the debt. I mean, it's simplistic, but it's devious as anything. And that's how they keep this debt going. It just keeps escalating. And, that was the plan. I know that. That was the plan, to keep everyone in debt.
So like Israel in Egypt during the time of Pharaoh, are we living in a generation after generation who are born into bondage with no disclosure, no plain contract, no idea of the depth of our bondage? Is that really where we're at in this whole thing?
Yes, it's totally that. I mean, you see what's going on with the finances the last 20 or 30 years. People don't even own their cars anymore.
Oh, no.
They lease them. I was thinking recently, back in the 1990s, people kept saying, well, we should be doing like the elite. We should control everything, but don't own it. And
that's actually explicated by Rockefellers themselves. I've heard the Rockefellers state
that. Yeah, well, that's I believe it is true. That's what they say, but it's what's going on. You should own what you have. I mean, they're getting it's into a communistic position, as far as I'm concerned. Yeah, that's what they do. They control things, and they really don't own it. It's on paper. But that's a fiction. It's fictionist. It's not real. And I think they did it to get people to into the system where they could be put in bondage and not own anything. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
No one really owns anything, and it was conditioning them. If Rockefellers say it, yeah, they do control it, but technically they do own it and control it. But the people that bought into that really don't own anything. They just keep going deeper into bondage, and they don't own anything.
And does this go in as well? And this, of course, moves us a little away from what I think was our core topic tonight, but I'll entertain it. Does it go into the fact that we do not have a legitimate currency, that our currency is basically debt-based since 1913?
That's a lot of it. And I think, they set it up on purpose under the Section 4 of the 14th Amendment. It just was progressive. It took them a while.
Yeah, because you went through the whole late 1800s with boom bust cycles, which I suspect were basically the overture to a centralized bank. After Jackson dissolved the Second National Bank and turned it back over to the states, then we went through how many cycles of recessions? In the late 1800s, the 1880s, 1890s, we went through boom-bust cycles. And then the overture was made that, again, we needed a central bank with the idea that basically we would then gradually bring in what is basically a non-funded currency.
You mean like the fiat currency that's in place now?
Right, exactly. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Well, they took us out the gold standard in 72, was it?
Nixon did, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It seemed things were pretty stable up until that time as far as inflation. You know, like gold held its value at $18 an ounce for 100 and some years.
And then it was benchmarked at, what, I think $35 an ounce. Certainly up until the time we went off the gold standard, I distinctly remember $35 an ounce.
So I think they can stabilize things without the gold backing. I'm not don't run the Federal Reserve, and I don't know how they handle these things. It's not my forte whatsoever. But I think the interest that they charge is the problem. I believe that wholeheartedly.
Well, you and I both would agree very much that usury is a sin according to the law of God. And that basically the accrual of interest piled upon interest with money that has no value in any real terms, but in fact is, and this is, you know, again, this is where it all gets so complex. And I understand this. You know, we talk about the people being idiots, and I have to say it's a fair estimation, but I've talked to people. It's very difficult to explain, and it's very difficult for people to grasp the depth of deception behind our monetary system. Because as one guy said to me, who I spent several hours trying to explain it to, he went, well, the money works fine for me. I buy groceries every week.
Yeah.
Well, on the surface, yes, that appears to work, but what did a bag of groceries cost you in 1979, and what does a bag of groceries cost you now? And then the difference between that is actually what you're seeing in the balancing of the books, which is escalating inflation over time, plus what they're doing with bonds, what they're doing with derivatives, and what they're doing in basically selling America by the pound, to sort of badly paraphrase Genesis there.
Right. Excuse me. We're getting into things that I'm not very versed at, I must admit. So I just know that it's gotten bad since 1970. For instance, there were people making, laws were on this inflation thing, and how good things were in the 60s before they did all this. There were people making $18 an hour back in 1970 at a packing plant that's near here. My parents' mortgage was $101 at the time. It was a modest house, a three-bedroom, small, but you know, these guys that worked at, I didn't know how much my father was making. He wouldn't tell me anyway back then. But these guys could work a day to pay their mortgage on those, you know, that salary or wage.
Yeah.
So people aren't doing that today. They're paying, what, upwards of $2,000, $3,000 for a mortgage.
Oh my gosh, people with two incomes now.
Two incomes. You know, you're right, to get that done. So yeah, things are way out of whack.
So that, and really, you know, that's what I was trying to drive at, basically, LB, was just the cost of our money is much higher than it would have been had we done things the right way and remained with a benchmark of value somewhere, even if it was selling bonds.
Yeah, again, I think the whole system's just whacked, and I want nothing to do with it. That's one of the reasons I got out of the system 20 years ago, because I wasn't going to pay for this debt that, you know, there's no disclosure on. We don't know how long it, you know, has run back, you know, so...
Let's talk a little bit about, first off, you know, one of the things that you do go into in your book is basically what happened to us as we were basically converted from something that was very close to natural law, common law, and international law into something that essentially became private law. And the 14th Amendment to me looks like the gateway into what became private corporate law as the law of the United States and its courts. Can you talk a little bit about that?
I didn't get into the Roman civil law until about 2000 after I wrote the first version, so I didn't wholly understand what was going on with the systems until I read Soames' Institutes of Roman Law. And then the light bulbs came on, because they're so cryptic about what they do here in the United States. It's like, how much do you know? You know, the more you know, the more up the pyramid you are. So, or to, you know, higher on the food chain, as some say. Mm-hmm. But after observing this and studying it for like 15 years now or more, and understanding what's happened, they said that we were under the common law prior to the 14th Amendment, but there was very strong civil law in the Constitution. And I mentioned Vattel before, and when I was reading through The Law of Nations by Vattel, I noticed that Vattel named members of a country citizens. He didn't call them subjects or nationals of the state. He referred to them as citizens, and everyone knows that a citizen is a subject of a municipality. So even in the Articles of Confederation, they adopted those principles of citizen. So that means the entities referred to as estates were all automatically municipalities. So you had private law, or, you know, Roman principles, Roman civil law principles already built into the system. So to say we were under strict common law systems and not to have any, not any civil law present is ridiculous. It was there from day one. So how to separate that is the question. Where did they separate it? And I think the whole, the principle is that you can live on the land in the states without being subject to private law. But the minute you submit to being a citizen, you know, participating in the political body, you're automatically subject to private law. And the it stair steps from there depending on what your status and what you're involved in.
So the first level of entree would clearly be what, registration and voting?
Oh, of course, yeah. And today's political arena or scheme, that's definitely the death knell, if you will. Like I tell people, the people that are voting are creating the rebellion, but you're still associated with them by being in the body politic that they're in as a citizen. So it doesn't matter if you're voting or not, you're like in the car robbing the bank.
Accessory to a felony.
Yeah, accessory to crimes.
Beautiful. So I guess that takes us into the concepts that you articulate later in the book, The Red Amendment, which have to do with status and correcting of status. And I know that's a big whole issue, and I know there's a lot of intricacy to it, but can you speak a little bit to that in terms of status and status correction?
Okay, I'm looking at the status page we put up on PAC right now, and it's defined in Bouvier's Law Dictionary, 1856 edition, is the condition of persons. So no matter what you do, you're going to be a person of some kind. The original Roman system was under private law or the law of persons. So the private ownership of land in the United States is dealt out in the same way. So you're dealing with this law of Rome, or the Roman civil law, as you were back then. So to say that we were under, you know, the common law strictly without having some kind of person assigned to you, or person status assigned to you, is pretty much non-existent. I've said for years it depends what person you are. So if you look in the U.S. Code, and this is their system they set up, I'm very pragmatic in the way I think about things. My whole concept was that people have a right to a territory to live. That's a human right, and that's recognized internationally. I think the United Nations, I know they even recognize that. So when you have if you're not a person and a member of a state, you don't have anything. There's nothing there. There's no inheritance. There's no wealth of a people that you belong to. So my whole belief was that we have the right to have that. So you can't say you're not a person of any kind, because that's the way it's defined in the U.S. Code. And one of the things I connected when I was doing my research in the modern nationality section of Title 8, that's where all this nationality references are defined. They're referencing citizens of the United States as nationals of the United States. So you're a citizen and national of the United States, and because the citizen of the United States language in the original system under the Constitution was basically, it was a term. It didn't mean anything, really. I wrote a paper on it, looking at the timeline on how they deviously crafted that term into being a federal citizen, even, or, you know, under a presumption that you're a federal citizen, even before the 14th Amendment was put in place. So they also define nationals of the states very craftily, you know, it's very secretively the way they've done it. So it was belief or researched opinion that you have to be a national of one of the states, which is still a person, which is recognized by international law, to cut the ties of the 14th Amendment. And it's called correction or relinquishment of United States nationality. And if you trace that code back, it goes down back to 1940, the Nationality Act of 1940, and they changed the language. It used to be called expatriation. So they kind of, deviously changed the language over the years. And but it means the same thing. You're technically expatriating the United States nationality when you correct your status.
Now, what is the status of a state national when, most of the states, let's say the states that were existent at the time of the 14th Amendment, just to have a baseline reference, those states would have had organic constitutions themselves, which to my limited research seems to indicate that those constitutions were all redone. I know here in my state, the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, the Constitution was redone. It looks like Virginia, Massachusetts, Rhode Island, all the other states have redone constitutions. So in effect, like the organic constituted union, we have a vacated form of government or an overlay of something completely different. So when one repatriates back into a state citizenship, what is the structure for that to occur without getting too specific? In other words, what do you repatriating into?
Someone asked that question today about the Constitution of Texas, for example. That's what he was asking about. Which one do we follow? And there's no case law on this. And if I was a judge, I would say the Constitution of a state is even public law. It applies to the public. Of course, the ones right now apply to the citizen and nationals of the United States, that body politic. I call it a body politic now because it's one. It's kind of like looking at the whole United States as one nation. Mm-hmm. And the states are counties, so to speak, of the United States. So it's one body politic opposed to bodies politic, many, you know, of the union. They reversed or consolidated the states. But it's my belief that no constitution applies to you. I said years ago that, you know, your state constitution applies to you, but I would argue that none of them do now after, you know, recognizing what's going on more after the years gone by. It really doesn't apply. None of the state, you just live there. You have the right to the nationality and the birth status, or, you know, that you have. But as far as the law, I don't know. It's in limbo land. You're not technically a citizen either, because you can't participate in government. There is some factors that allow the counties to be exempt from the 14th Amendment system, but no one's practicing that. All the counties are involved in the elections, all the statutes, mm-hmm. and everything that governs the counties are all citizen of the United States driven. So everyone's stuck with the 14th Amendment system.
And yet at the same time, you know, what you just said there, I've actually recently heard at least one other somebody I sort of at least respect somewhat state is that the Constitution is a dead article at this point. You know, people are trying to get it back. People are trying to invoke it. But in fact, it's a dead article in terms of anything that's going to allow us to participate in meaningful change.
Well, see, what would happen to get things back on track? They would have to hold a plebiscite.
Callers, please mute. Please mute. Callers.
Someone just came on.
Yeah, somebody just came on. Please mute your Skype.
Star 4.
Just however you can mute your...
Okay.
Yeah, Star 4 doesn't really apply here. It's however your phone works.
Yeah, however, right?
Yeah, we're... Anyway.
It's technical. I'm sorry, I faded about 10 to 9 here. My mind's gone.
No, that's okay.
I'm not articulating.
No, well, actually, you are. And you know, this is the first interview. And it wasn't my intent to bring you on and get real detailed with it. What I was trying to do, LB, is just to give the listeners, and that will be the people who now hear the podcast since the live show has been nuked by our decoding software, but give them a flavor of what you're doing in terms of the Red Amendment, because, again, I'll just say this. I'm not even exactly sure how I swerved into you or the book. But as I began to engage in the book, and this goes back to, I guess, autumn of this year when I purchased the Red Amendment, this for me was kind of like the next level in my own ongoing education. Mm-hmm. And the people who listen to my show, we do law subjects from time to time. We try to find meaningful pieces of the puzzle to put together. I don't consider that anybody's going to bring a definitive answer. And I said that in the preface to the show tonight, is that
I think the problems are as unique as each individual person, and I think the solutions are the same. I think each one of us is kind of working this out under our own circumstances. And, you know, if I don't even, I'm just going to say this, you know, if you don't have a spiritual base, you're probably going to get lost in all of this because the deception is so thick in all of the aspects of law that unless you have something that really does anchor you spiritually, this is a quagmire.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that 100%. And over the years, you know, I've seen a lot of people, and the spiritual base is the key. Some people get it without that, but they still struggle. I've had some people say that they've grown from just reading my book, and they kind of go backwards. They find their spiritual base after they read the book. I was lucky when I started reading. I didn't pick up a Bible when I started into the law. Like I said, 20 years ago, I hadn't read a Bible. And actually studying law helped me understand the Bible a lot better. It was easy to understand what was going on in the Bible because I knew the secular law and what was going on. So, of course, my spiritual base was already there. I believed that divine intervention happened with me to write that book because I still can't believe I wrote it, and especially in the short time that I did. So, you know, the people that, like you say, that they don't have a spiritual base, this is going to be way above their heads. They're not going to get it. And as we know, they've been trying to take people away from the Bible or what we use as a spiritual reference. Mm-hmm. The past 20 years. I mean, or 30, it's been longer.
No, it's
than
one
that.
Of the planks of the Communist Manifesto, as
sure.
You bring up in your book. I mean, this was actually part of the unraveling of the Union itself, because you could argue about the founding fathers being deists or Christians, and I think there was a mixture in there. Mm-hmm. I think there were pagans as well. I think Ben Franklin's a little suspect to me. I've looked at Benny's life and something wrong there, but
yeah.
Okay. But there was still a spiritual foundation. They recognized the Creator. They recognized the God that we would call the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, the Father mm-hmm. of our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. And I'm not ashamed to say that. I don't have a problem with it. I think the Bible's a flawed book, but I also think it provides the fundamentals for people to understand morality and law and apply them in a way that makes sense without even being dogmatic about it.
I agree. So, anyway, where should we go from here? Like I said,
well,
I faded.
I'm going to take you. I'm going to kind of, because if you can hang with me here for to the top of the hour, you know, we'll have a show.
Yeah, that's fine.
And despite the fact that we've basically been dancing with the wolves of disaster tonight, we will pull this puppy out. But I want to talk a little bit about PAC, and I want to talk about what your vision of PAC is, what PAC is now, and I want you to talk about your declaration of war.
Okay. After 20 years watching the people in this movement, I just finally got fed up with all this. Everyone's divided, and they all have different agendas for whatever reason. You know, they're spiritual emptiness to thinking the 10th Amendment still exists, which it doesn't. And there's just one rule that applies here that I believe is very important. Everyone is controlled by law. There's something like 3 million lawyers in the United States. Mm-hmm. We have the highest prison rate in the world. The fact is, there would be no people in prison if it was not, in the federal prisons, if it wasn't for the 14th Amendment. So between the money issues that we were just talking about, the federal or the public debt not able to be questioned pursuant to the 14th Amendment Section 4, the criminal activity that people are involved in pursuant to the 14th Amendment Section 2, the theft of their lawful nationality of the states, this is the most important thing that needs to be understood. I don't care what you're doing otherwise. I don't care if you believe in the Bible. I don't care if you think the money's a problem. This, what PAC is doing, is more important than everything, because we're controlled by all this. For example, NAFTA and GATT did not happen until they passed the laws to make it happen. The things that were incorporated in it, these corporations could not do what they have done without the law passed. So that's just one example of how they do follow the law. And it's destroying us, and people ignore it. There's a reason why people are not taught the law in school. It's to jack us around.
Yeah.
And people ignore it. They ignore Reconstruction and what it's done. So there's no other thing to do but declare war against anyone that doesn't align with PAC. And why is PAC, the one to do it? Because that's what we're preaching. We're the only ones telling the truth. Wasn't it Thoreau that said there's many people not striking at the root of evil?
Yeah.
Sometimes I'm paraphrasing. I don't have it in front of me, but no one's striking at the root here. And this amendment is evil. It gave corporations their power that they have today, and protections. And everything is contingent on this. So, yeah, there's nothing else to do but just say you're either with us or with the New World Order. There's only two sides. There's their political agenda. They follow we're following their rule of law, but they use politics and law to take advantage of us. And our ignorance of the law is the problem. So there's only two sides here, their side and the side that we're professing needs to be done. This is part and parcel of the communist New World Order. It's a plan for this new age, the age of Aquarius, and they're getting rid of the Bible, they're getting rid of Jesus, the teachings of Jesus, and going into this Luciferian system, which is, ancient. They're just going back to what they practiced before Jesus threw a monkey wrench into the works.
So the vision of PAC is basically built around the idea of communities. Pardon me.
Right. Everything's local. We got to get back local. We got to start building local economies. Even that Mises, they're bad news. All this is run by these people that have destroyed us. I've traced back the Austrian economics. All these.
Oh my gosh! Yeah, that's.
Yeah, all this stuff comes out of the same place that the Illuminati did. This is all their think tank is in Austria and the Germanic areas.
Well, these were basically the people who were worshiping at the feet of Adam Smith and the Wealth of Nations concept, which was, the seed for what we call capitalism, which was enshrined into this country as a virtue. I mean, I grew up being indoctrinated into capitalism. And then I spent, I shudder to think now, but I spent almost 5 years of my life studying Ayn Rand. And then coming out the other side of the end of that, realizing that that was just another gateway to hell as well.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. She was bad. And, you know, just another messenger or person to distract people and take them down the evil path. There was a man named James Edney. I tried to contact him, but he wrote a treatise or a paper on, it was called Greed. And he centered on Ayn Rand and just trashed her. And, you know, she was not good. And from what I understand, she was in bed with the
Rothschilds.
The Rothschilds, yeah. Right. And of course, dare say she was a Jew.
Yeah.
Like all of them. So I don't want to get into
you
that.
Got that. You got tonight. That. You got that.
Yeah, but there's the problem. It's a synagogue of Satan, the same problem that was in the Bible. So anyway, back to local, you know, we got to get back to local economies and take their economies away from, their economic systems away from them. We got to get our lands back. Like I said earlier, a people is nothing without land. They
anchored to the land. That was always the great promise, even in the Old Testament. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and, you know, limit trade. You know, talking about Facebook and their minions they have out there, these brainwashed children that are, you know, anywhere from 16 to 35 years old. They're all just minions of this New Age, New World Order system. I was describing what I believed on a Facebook thread, and I didn't say I was a isolationist. He goes, "You're an isolationist. You're a terrorist.
You're a xenophobe."
No, he said, "You're a terrorist."
Oh, okay. Oh, uh-huh.
So it's like, oh, really? Okay. So yeah, the voluntarist movement, that's all part of this Marxist system. The anarchist, that's all part of it. They're all just taking over, are taking the places of the communist factions that existed in the 20th century and of course back to the 19th. They're just the new minions to move this thing forward and get it done. And the reason being, they don't care about law. I haven't seen one anarchist. Of course, they hate the law. So this voluntarist, I have no idea what they're about. Voluntary participation, well, we have that now. You don't have to, you know.
Well, the IRS says it's voluntary.
Well, that is voluntary. That's another misconception of the movement. That's voluntary assessment is what that means. Mm-hmm. You have to assess your taxes. The government doesn't do it for you. That's another half truth.
That's called being a free bookkeeper, basically.
Yes, basically, yes. But these anarchists, they're just pigeonholed. It's the whole program's planned opposition, and I know it's been around for a while. A lot of these, you know, like Rothbard, Mises, all these people kind of danced around these principles, but it's just part of their pigeonholing people, you know, the population of a country, which would be state, or people in general of the United States, you could even say it that to pigeonhole them to, so these guys can keep control of the countries they've taken over. So it's just more planned opposition. So that's the reason, you know, you have to draw a line in the sand and put an end to all this, or it's not going to get fixed. Like I said, they control everyone with law. Be it constitutional law or international law, you know, the private law is what's got everyone over the the fire right now. So, let me read something by Daniel Webster that I found. He said back in about 1850, he was a senator of one of the original colony states out east. But he said, I apprehend no danger to our country from a foreign foe. Our destruction, should it come at all, will be from another quarter. From the inattention of the people to the concerns of their government, from their carelessness and negligence, I must confess that I do apprehend some danger. I fear that they may place too implicit a confidence in their public servants and fail properly to scrutinize their conduct, that in this way they will be made the dupes of designing men and become instruments of their own undoing. Make them intelligent and make them vigilant. Give them the means directing the wrong, and they will apply the remedy. Of course, he knew what was going on back in the 1850s, and he's just warning people of the plan to, create the extreme ignorance that they have today, and so they could be taken advantage of. So
I guess my comment to that is, can you plan ignorance, or is ignorance just simply sloth and laziness?
It is. That's one of the, you watch in the next couple of years, if PAC doesn't do what I hope it does, that Republican freedom is going to be a catchphrase from the movement now. And it's interesting because before I came on the scene 15 years ago and wrote my book, you never heard anyone in the movement refer to the states as countries. And it's nothing I invented. It's just something that was glaring in Bouvier's Law Dictionary. Each state is a country. It says it right in there. Another thing was the nationality issue. It really wasn't an issue until I wrote my book. And now everyone's talking about it, and they've parted my book out in bits and pieces and destroyed it. All these, self-important people. Another reason why I'm declaring war on the movement, because no one's working together. They just, for whatever reasons, they take what they want, they mix it with garbage, patriot rhetoric, and just destroy the principles of what I'm trying to get across, because of their self-importance, egos, or monetary gain that they're trying to gain out of this or get. I think a lot of it's just ego. They want to be the big man on campus is what the problem is, for a lot of them. Of course, then you have the operatives, the paid plants that are out there just trying to confuse people in general. There's a plethora of them out there right now.
Yeah.
And, I don't make any, I don't distinguish between operatives and opportunists. They're the same thing, because they create the same damage. It doesn't matter if they're getting paid by someone or not. They have the same effect. So they're all lumped into the same box. So if I call someone an operative, it doesn't matter if they're an opportunist. They're not working together. They have their own agenda for whatever reason, and they're hurting us all.
There's a couple of red herrings that, real quickly here as we wrap up this talk tonight, LB. One of them is this concept of the name. Specifically the all caps letters, but even the idea that somehow the name, our names, have been registered, enrolled, monetized. Can you talk about that a little bit?
The straw man principles.
Right, yeah.
It's all pretty much nonsense. There possibly is a progression of what happened, and the all cap name might mean entities. I mean, they say it right in the U.S. code that the private law or the person is a legal entity. I have personally no problem with that. It's how the system works. What other system is going to be better than this one? The problem with the system is the people don't know how it works. They don't know who they are. And again, it gets back to the spiritual ground that they need to understand what is going on before they can even, you know, understand this, like you said. I'll give you a couple examples. You never see a straw man or whatever in jail. It's always the man.
Exactly.
And here's something people don't think about, because they don't know law whatsoever. They indict people under John Doe. If they don't know who the suspect is or the one they're after, they'll use John Doe in the indictments. There's a different name applied to this man, okay? So there's something else that attaches them besides the name is the point. So this whole name thing is a red herring, and it's BS. It's a waste of time. The private law was around longer than the all cap name thing. That's maybe part of the bankruptcy, but again, with the progress, it's just an evolution of the law system that they have. That's all contingent, or based on, rather, than on the 14th Amendment. Of course, most of this crap's coming out of Canada. There's a lot of people up there that have caused a lot of problems.
Yeah,
it's funny. The biggest one now is transvestite. So people are following a transvestite. That's the big running thing right now. They're saying, I think, dump the name or something like that. Well, I saw a video or heard a video of some girl getting yanked out of her car after she wouldn't give her name. So it's not the name. They have jurisdiction over you. And there's Supreme Court cases that say they do have the right to know who you are and get an ID from you. And it just causes problem. PAC goes to peace with the government. They know who we are. We go in and talk to them. We try to educate the sheriffs so they know what's going on. So we break this chain of abuse that the adversary has put out there. You know, they've demonized the sovereign citizen movement. They created it, I believe, to demonize it. And it's a real problem. And without unity and people knowing the true law, you know, which comes from the Creator and on up, nothing's going to get fixed. They're going to keep getting, you know, manhandled, for lack of better terms.
I'm wondering if you would mind, we've got a few people on the line with us here. If anybody wants to ask a question or make a comment as we close out tonight, open it up for a few minutes here. So if anybody on the call wants to question or comment for L.V. Bork, this is your chance to do so.
Okay.
Well, we'll wait patiently.
That's good.
Sound of one hand clapping. Anyway, yeah. That's fine too. I just wanted to give folks an opportunity. Yeah.
There's someone.
Yep. Go ahead.
Yeah. Hey, LB. I heard the comment that you just made about the name and the straw man and all that thing. But you know, down through history, it's been known that even during the Roman times, when the Roman Empire was in power, that they created legal fictions to gain jurisdiction over people. So why is not the 14th Amendment doing the same thing? Because it is creating a legal fiction. I'm sorry.
It is. You're right. And I say that is a problem.
Yes.
But the name thing is it's not the root of the problem.
I agree. But, you know, I wanted to say that because the way that it was presented just a minute ago, it appeared that, you know, that you just kind of threw the whole part of the legal fiction part out. But, you know, we know that they create legal fiction, and that's how they gain jurisdiction. And if they gain jurisdiction through legal fiction, the only way that some of these entities that come into these courts, like they tell you that the federal courts, there's no common law in the federal court. But the But the legal entities like the IRS and all those people, they come into the federal court under common law and declare the law. They declare the law because they come in as a corporate soul. And they come in and they declare the law. And when they declare the law, that is the law, especially if you are a legal entity standing there and not coming in also under common law. I'll mute and listen.
Okay. You're right. And the problem I have with the movement is when you're not taking care of the problem and allowing this gray area they play in, it allows the system to perpetuate or persist. It keeps going on and on. And they love the gray area. And one of my goals was to destroy the gray area and have people draw a line in the sand and either get on one side or the other. And this isn't going to be done until everyone's working together or decides to do the right thing. I keep using that, and everyone has issue with it, but they have to do the right thing and get on the one side of the fence or the other. And put an end to this game they play with the 14th Amendment. And I have issue with the legal fiction terminology. You know, a legal fiction is a presumption made by a court if there's no evidence to prove otherwise. So they're going to sit there and presume all day if they don't have the evidence that you're not a U.S. citizen. There's court cases that say they have jurisdiction over you if you can't prove it. And just saying that in court's not going to work. You know, some people might get a garbage win occasionally and win the argument or the position, but it's not law. I mean, they're still going to come after people. And the reason they like these garbage wins or let these things happen is because it allows them to keep the system in place. And the scam goes on. And as far as people being corporations, that's not true either. People aren't corporations, they're natural persons. Within the body of the law, persons, which is the civil law.
And yet, I've heard that advanced many times, and even by people that I like and respect. This idea of a corporate wrong. Fiction.
No, fiction means what I said it means, and it's I had it verified by a bunch of people that have been studying law. It's one of those misused terms by the movement. It's a presumption by a court. Because they don't have evidence to the contrary. That's a fiction of law. It's not the straw man. It circles around that concept, but that's the problem I have. It's not absolute
exactly
law.
It's not
it's theories, it's philosophies, and they're not accurate. And that's why I get upset at the movement, because they're all mistaught. They get junk off YouTube that's wrong, and they don't bury their nose in the source books. And like I said, even the American source books, the law dictionaries, Black's Law, they're all cryptic. And you have to go back to the source law, which would be the Roman law. And like I said, Soame was the book that really opened my eyes to this whole scheme that's going on under the 14th Amendment, and even the system prior to the 14th Amendment, like I was saying, that it's ridiculous to think that civil law wasn't part of the structure of the United States from day one. There is a separation there. There's definitely a separation.
Yeah, there is. My contention has been, and it's actually pissed a few people off, including people that I've had on this show, when I've said this reliance on the name as a means, and there are people that are extreme about it. There are people who are literally on the street homeless, all the while protesting that the government has stolen their name, stolen their identity, stolen a trust fund. And
yeah, man, that's all nonsense. All these people have gone to jail or prison. I don't know anyone that's argued that in one. You know, like I say, there's some occasional garbage wins in a traffic court. But when it comes down to, mortgages and things of this nature, it's ridiculous. It doesn't work.
No. And that's been my point. My point isn't to say that there isn't some truth in some of that, but it's not the major point. And it, you know, it looks to me like, based on the years that I've both sat on the sidelines or been involved with what you call the movement, although I can't say I've ever been part of, you know, a movement, is that they have focused on minor issues. I mean, the extreme case of that is the Montana Freeman and what they were doing with straw man fictions, and they abused it to the point where a bunch of them went to prison. I mean, my right. God, they went out and floated phony bonds and bought cars and land and all kinds of stuff with basically counterfeit bonds. Well, you know, could I just point out something? The Federal Reserve does not tolerate competition. Rockefeller himself said competition is a sin. The only people that get the counterfeit in this country right now, legally, is the Federal Reserve, and they do right. not take kindly to people who encroach on their territory.
Right. We that's PAC principle. That's our mantra, that we don't try to compete with these guys. We just go to peace with the government, and it's kind of like, you leave us alone and we'll leave you alone. And the angry people, we don't want. We need peaceful people that understand what we're talking about here tonight. And they have to have a good spiritual base and some kind of, moral background. I mean, I see so many people that just don't get it. They don't understand law whatsoever. And it's really pathetic.
Well, as we wrap this up tonight, LB, why don't you give out websites first for the Red Amendment and for PAC? I know you've got a bunch of websites, so just kind of enumerate that so as we go out, people know how to find you. We'll also post these links out as well with the show when it goes online.
Okay, thank you. The main PAC site right now is the PAC Alliance. That's PACAlliance.us. PAC is the acronym for People's Awareness Coalition. Yeah, it's PAC. And then the Red Amendment can be found at redamendment.net. It's just the way it's spelled, R-E-D-A-M. I can't spell
E-N-D-M-E-N-T,
yeah. Like I said, I lost my center about an hour ago. Yeah. No, I'm very tired for whatever reason.
Well, it's tiring, and it's been a tiring... it's very difficult when we had our technology fail on us tonight to, it just plays on you. And it was actually kind of a relief when I finally shut the stream down and we just sat here and talked. It'll get shared with the people who need to and want to hear it. And I thank those souls who were online tonight who could not hear this. I will reward you with getting this out as quickly as possible. And I want to thank you, LB, for coming on. I want to thank those who joined us on the Skype line to listen tonight. And I hope we can do this again. And I hope that maybe we can find some way to begin a path of bringing people together in unification. Because to me, it feels like right now we're dying the death of a thousand cuts at the hands of this whole system.
Yes.
All right. Very good, my friend. It was great talking to you. This is All Planet Radio. I'm Randy Moggins. I'd like to say we were live tonight. We were not. So you'll get this as a podcast. The truth is out there. It's inside you. Keep searching for it. We'll be back with the show again very soon.
This is Off Planet Radio.